Now, a new study by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention looks at the impact of alcohol on mortality in the United States. The annual death toll was in the range of 140,000. That comes from data before the COVID-19 pandemic when alcohol consumption went up. Two-thirds of those deaths are among working-age Americans between the ages of 20 and 64. That accounts for 1 out of every 8 deaths in that age range. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is alcohol abuse an issue that has affected you or someone close to you at your workplace and your family? How are you dealing with yourself? Do you have questions about the public health surrounding alcohol, what we could do to dial down this problem? Do you have thoughts on alcohol culture in the United States and here in Wisconsin in particular? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Patrick Remington is a professor emeritus in the Department of Population Health Sciences at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. He's director of the UW-Madison Preventive Medicine Residency Program. Dr. Remington, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be back. Thanks.
This is a trend, sadly, that you've been watching for quite some time now. These numbers, this is 2015 to 2019 data crunched here, confirm a lot of what we were seeing even before the pandemic, right?
Well, it does. We actually did a study very similar to this more than 20 years ago in Wisconsin, and the results were very similar. In that study, about 5% of all deaths in all ages were related to alcohol. And we don't like to say necessarily abuse, because sometimes a moderate alcohol consumption can increase the risk of a chronic disease, for example. And if many people are drinking alcohol moderately, then you can actually see a lot of disease and death related to what one might call normal use or not abuse of alcohol.
And this working age range, 1 in 8 deaths from 20 to 64, if you crunch it down to 20 and 34, I think it was 1 in 4 deaths. So these are ages that are less prone to die of some other causes. But what does that say to you, these numbers, when it comes to people in that 20 to 64 age range?
Well, it's a good point. I had always thought about all ages and that sort of 1 in 20 or 5% of deaths. But when you begin to narrow the age group to 20 to 64, working age, typical working age population, that percentage goes up to about 13%, even more in men. Men tend to drink more heavily and therefore have a higher proportion of disease caused by alcohol use. And then, as you point out, when you get to the ages of 20 to 40, for example, it's even a higher percentage. But again, as you mentioned, fortunately, relatively few people die under the age of 40. So although there are fewer deaths, more of them are due to alcohol, and most of them are due to what we call the acute effects, injuries related to motor vehicle crashes, even homicides and suicides. Alcohol contributes to those deaths. When you study a homicide, you find that many times the perpetrator or the victim have high blood alcohol levels, and therefore we posit that alcohol contributed to that event.
Talking to Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus at the Department of Population Health Sciences at UW-Madison, looking at the latest CDC numbers on death related to alcohol. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions? Do you have solutions? Do you have thoughts on our public health approach to alcohol and the damage it can do? You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, questions, or experiences. That's 800-642-1234. Dr. Remington, as you mentioned, there are different things that go from alcohol to mortality. I want to talk about a few different ones and get into some possible public health approaches. One that we've talked about in the past is kind of a straight line from alcohol consumption to health problems that cause death. This is on my mind actually a lot in the last couple of years in my other life. I'm in the music community. There's a lot of drinking there. A couple of years ago, we lost a collaborator of mine in Wisconsin Rapids who died of an early dementia caused by alcohol. Just got word this week that a former bandmate lost his wife. Again, physical damage caused by chronic drinking. Can you talk about that as a cause of death, that excessive ongoing drinking, and what we can do to try to help people out of that?
Well, there's no question that what we call chronic heavy drinking is bad for your health. The liver is the organ most affected by this. And the leading causes of death in this study were liver disease, alcoholic liver disease, cirrhosis. And so that's the organ that really suffers the most with heavy alcohol consumption. And what does that mean, heavy alcohol consumption? Mm-hmm. Well, most people say that having more than two drinks a day, three or four or five drinks every day for many years is heavy alcohol use. That might not constitute problem drinking because people may be able to function perfectly in society. So we wouldn't call that an alcoholic drinking pattern, but it is certainly bad for health. And these chronic diseases do accumulate, and there aren't very good treatments for the alcohol-induced liver disease, for example, heart disease, hypertension risk increases. And there are half a dozen or more cancers that are related to heavy alcohol use. So yes, heavy alcohol use, alcohol is a poison. And when taken in excess, it definitely affects the health and shortens one's life.
From a public health perspective, what do you see as the most effective means of outreach, prevention, to get the message out to people that that is a dangerous habit to have, and then to help them kick that habit?
Well, I think there are two approaches. One is individually. Everybody obviously needs to assess their own drinking behavior. Even more recently, a study just published last spring looked at light drinking. And we used to think that light drinking actually was good for your heart, a drink or maybe two a day. But the most recent research suggests that that's not, in fact, mm-hmm. the case. There's very little risk with a drink or so a day that has been shown in this research. But the more you drink, the greater the risk is. And so I think individually, we all have to self-monitor and think about our own risk. But the second area is what we can do as a community. For example, studies have shown that when you raise the tax on a product, fewer people consume that product. And so states and communities that have raised the excise tax on alcohol see less consumption. And that's been an approach that's been used widely, not just with alcohol, but with cigarettes, for example. The other issue is alcohol density. The more places that sell alcohol, the more hours, the higher the drinking patterns are. So that those are population-based or public health approaches that attempt to improve the health of everybody, not just individuals who have problem drinking.
And then, so I gave the example of chronic, long-term heavy drinking. Now, how about that acute instance? And we've talked about this before, too. Maybe it's binge drinking or somebody drinking more than they're used to. And as you mentioned, that could be connected to a homicide, a car crash, a fall, especially for seniors. How do we tackle that side of the problem?
Again, that's a very tough problem because those individuals who decide to drink, the term is binge drinking, where you drink maybe four or five drinks on one occasion, and then go out and drive a car or operate machinery or just fall. Those events are very predictable. We know from lots of research that people get impaired from even moderate drinking, and certainly binge drinking leads to an increase in risk. And so we've addressed this problem by having stiffer drunk driving laws and things like have a friend drive, where you may continue to drink, but you've decided to designate a driver in your group. So there are approaches, one of which is to avoid binge drinking, but the other is to avoid the activity that is dangerous when you've been binge drinking. And both of those have been successful. We've seen some evidence that car crashes related to alcohol use have decreased, but they're certainly not where they need to be. And there's a lot of more progress that can be made.
Talking to Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Population Health Sciences and Director of the UW-Madison Preventive Medicine Residency Program, looking at the latest CDC numbers on deaths linked to alcohol in the United States. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We know these problems have been on the rise pre-pandemic. How did the pandemic impact alcohol use among you, your circle of family and friends? Do you see chronic heavy drinking in your community? Are there changes you think we need to make in our culture here in Wisconsin surrounding alcohol? Join in with your thoughts, questions, or experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We continue our talk with Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Population Health Sciences at UW-Madison, Director of the UW-Madison Preventive Medicine Residency Program. With us today to talk about the latest study looking at alcohol-related deaths among working-age Americans. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Have you changed the way you drink or whether you drink over time? How did it work for you? How has alcohol affected the health, your health in your family? Call in at 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Brian is with us in Madison. Brian, hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
I was just wondering if there is any data correlating income level with drinking, whether it's the risky drinking or just those long-term health effects. I know when I was in my young 20s, we couldn't afford to go out snowboarding or on a road trip, but we could split a 24-rack of PBR, and that's a good enough weekend. So I was just wondering if this affects people at lower incomes at higher rates.
Brian, thanks for the call. Dr. Remington, I know there are efforts to break things down demographically. Do we know if there's any link between income level and problem drinking or alcohol-induced mortality?
Well, again, this study did not look at that specifically. They looked more at the regional variation, and we see tremendous differences from state to state. Culture is a very big driver in alcohol use patterns and misuse patterns. And so that differs across all socioeconomic levels. And then the second thing is that the different causes of death are very different in different socioeconomic groups. For example, alcoholism and alcohol abuse is higher in people with who earn less money. Sometimes even the alcohol causes one to lose a job, and it's a spiral effect. But the binge drinking that you see, for example, drinking and driving, or even moderate heavy drinking, is not so strongly tied with economics. So it really requires you to tease out the specific causes of death and health problems. And so there isn't the association that you might see with cigarette smoking, for example, where rates of cigarette smoking are much higher in people with less education and people who are earning less. That alcohol-related problems are less clearly related to those social economic factors.
Brian, thanks for that call and that question at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Lydia in Eau Claire. Lydia, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm interested in the idea of broadening, having people more aware that there are strategies to alcohol abuse beyond AA, because of course AA has done wonderful things for millions of people, but it also does not resonate with a lot of people who do have alcohol use disorder. And it's about curiosity around the whys of drinking and developing self-compassion. And of course, AA's peer group model, and sponsorship models to our genius, but I'm just saying that broader options besides AA.
Lydia, I gotcha. Thanks a lot for the call. Dr. Remington, is there a range of options for treatment, especially as Lydia was talking about, for people who would be seen as problem alcoholics?
Well, it's a great question. And as a preventive medicine physician, I truly believe that we should begin earlier, not just at younger ages, but earlier in problem drinking. That there are programs that are effective once somebody is affected by alcoholism and heavy drinking, but we have much more effective approaches that involve asking patients about their alcohol consumption and then giving brief advice about what might become a problem later on. So that brief counseling, how much are you drinking? Well, I hear you're drinking 2 drinks a day, every day. You know, that's a moderate level, and that pattern could lead to health problems down the road. It's much easier to intervene earlier in one's life and before problem drinking begins. So I couldn't agree more with the caller. We have to rely on those effective programs once people have suffered the consequences and become addicted or alcoholic, but it is much more effective to work earlier in the life and earlier in the problem drinking continuum.
Lydia, thanks a lot for that call. Dr. Remington, that kind of screening you just mentioned, screening and advice, is that common? Is that universal in doctor's appointments? Where are we with that?
Well, it's a great question. The research has been done. It's convincing. It's called screening and brief interventions and referral. So simply asking the question isn't good enough. But the evidence is very much there that if a physician or a healthcare provider asks you the question, has the conversation, that people open up and are often surprised to hear that even moderate drinking can lead to health problems. And then you refer to programs that can help people modify their drinking behaviors. Unfortunately, our healthcare system is not aligned as well as it could be to promote those effective preventive services. They don't get compensated very well. Health visits tend to be problem-oriented as opposed to prevention-oriented. So yes, they're effective. Some health systems implement them, but I think there's a lot more opportunity for doing that. Because again, prevention is the best medicine. And if we can intervene by having that conversation earlier, the changes are much easier for individuals to make.
Lydia, thanks again for that call. Talking to Dr. Patrick Remington about new data out from the CDC on alcohol-related deaths in the United States. Dr. Remington, you mentioned that they broke it down by region, and we can look at states from this report and, of course, from research you've done. What do we know about Wisconsin in particular?
It's a very interesting question, Rob. I immediately assumed Wisconsin would lead the list on deaths related to alcohol, but was surprised to see we are in about the middle. And then I recalled that we actually did a study about 20 years ago where, despite Wisconsin leading the nation in rates of drinking and binge drinking, we don't lead the nation in cirrhosis deaths. And what that means is that most likely in Wisconsin, we have a lot of people, a lot more people who drink, but we don't have, there's no evidence that I've seen of a higher rate of people who have problem drinking and diseases related to alcohol abuse and misuse. So that we have a high rate of participation in drinking, but many people drink light drinkers or moderate drinkers. So we don't certainly lead the list of states that are seeing this. States like New Mexico, Alaska, Wyoming, those states have a much higher alcohol-related death rate than we do here in Wisconsin. Not that there isn't opportunity to improve. We certainly can reduce the alcohol-related deaths in our state, but we don't lead the nation in that measure.
And you've talked about a couple of the ways we can help reduce those numbers in Wisconsin or anywhere. How about culture and community and how we talk about drinking, how we drink, how we take care of each other when we're drinking to avoid those acute incidents, whether it's a car crash or a fall? Do you see room for improvement in Wisconsin on those measures?
Well, we know that one approach, prohibition, does not work. So I think any attempt to prohibit alcohol use is not going to be effective. I think certainly education early on about what is problem drinking, the difference between light and moderate drinking, heavy long-term drinking, and then acute alcohol use like binge drinking. So I think having conversations with your family members, your peers, but also the healthcare system does play a really important role in providing this kind of advice. Again, many people that I talk to don't realize that breast cancer, colon cancer, very common cancers that we certainly all want to avoid, are related to alcohol use. So when you look at a report like this, it is surprising how many chronic diseases, heart disease, stroke, liver disease, but also a number of cancers are related to moderate and heavy alcohol use. So I think that information alone can persuade some people. And then we have to come in with policies that have been shown to reduce alcohol use in addition to simply public education.
Dr. Remington, as always, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
That's Dr. Patrick Remington, Professor Emeritus in the Department of Population Health Sciences at UW-Madison and Director of the UW-Madison Preventive Medicine Residency Program. He joins us to talk about a new CDC study that shows 1 in 8 deaths among working-age Americans are alcohol-related. If you or someone you know needs help with alcohol abuse or addiction, you can contact 800-662-HELP. That's 800-662-4357. With the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration for referral and information services.